Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Thus being favored by the spiritual master, according to the words of Lord Shiva, Sudyumna regained his desired maleness every alternate month, and in this way ruled the kingdom, although the citizens were not satisfied with this. Purport. Very short purport. The citizens could understand that the king was transformed into a female every alternate month, and therefore could not discharge his royal duty. Consequently, they were not very satisfied. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Nitinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshitarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. Some very unusual topics for discussion that have come up in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Perhaps not so unusual from the point of view of what's going on around us nowadays, because this seems to be the flavor of what's happening everywhere around us, where it's not so unusual to move from being a male to a female and vice versa. And I was wondering what we could speak about this. But some thoughts come to mind. Number one, that because we see these things happening in the modern day world by surgeries, nowadays males are becoming females and females are becoming males. And there is discussion about how sometimes they have a female psychology trapped in a male body and therefore feel the need to move to a female body. And sometimes there is a male body trapped in a female body and they feel the need to move to a male body. And these things are now surgically possible. Of course, what kind of karma it takes to be in a distressful situation like that is another topic. But we see this increasingly happening now. It's not that mixed genders were unknown in the Vedic times. We find mention of them even in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There were males, there were females, and there were also eunuchs who were in between somewhere. I don't know what the technical term is as of today's language, but we see descriptions that the kings would employ these eunuchs to guard the residential places of the princesses in the palaces, because then the princesses were safe. They couldn't have male guards because there was risk there. So they employed these eunuchs, and that was how there is mention in the scriptures like this. For example, in the case of Usha, the son of Banasura, there were eunuchs who were guarding her, so there's descriptions like this. So anyway, it's not a very happy situation to be in. In any case, whether one is a male or a female, it's still not a happy situation to be in, because we are in a material body in the material world. So in any case, it's a place of suffering. And then on top of it, when you have an identity problem with the body itself, we have a fundamental identity problem, because we are not the body and we imagine ourselves to be the body. So that is the fundamental and most disastrous identity problem that we can have. And on top of that, you have another identity crisis where you don't know whether you're a male or a female. That can really be troublesome. There are other types of identity problems where, you know, people remember their previous lives, and then they don't know whether they are the person of this life or the person of the previous life. And of course, it's not a very healthy thing to remember your previous lives, because it's enough to have the problems of one life to deal with, and you start remembering the problems of your previous life, that's a lot. So this kind of situation where you have a male being surgically transformed into a female body, or and vice versa, may seem to be quite extraordinary, but we see in the scriptures that these things happened, but not in a gross way. The difference between the Vedic times and now is that everything now is simply gross. The technology is gross. The mentality is gross. Transformations are gross. Everything around us, the environment, is gross. But in the Vedic times, everything was subtle. Weaponry was subtle. Although there were physical weapons too. But you had physical weapons that were discharged by the power of mantras. You had abilities that were mystic. If you look at a list of all the siddhis mentioned, I won't mention them in case somebody gets an idea that it's a nice thing to have. We can get distracted from bhakti yoga when we hear of the bewildering array of siddhis that could be attained if one takes to Ashtanga Yoga. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary to the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, lists out a whole variety of these siddhis which can be mind-boggling. You can control another person's mind, just imagine. If you could do that to your wife or husband or to somebody else. You can enter into another person's body. You can reach out into another country sitting right here and obtain some very desirable object. Prabhupada used to speak about this. The yogi sitting in the, you know, in Bengal, let's say, could reach out to Afghanistan and pluck a pomegranate fruit and take it, just sitting where he is. Mind-boggling siddhis and mystic perfections, which can actually bewilder the minds of ordinary people, and therefore they think these are the things that we need to acquire. This is what life is all about. Even when they take to spiritual life, they may become yogis, but when they get these powers, then they just lose it. Then they think this is what yoga is all about. Because having such power with you can turn anybody's mind. Because this kind of power can intoxicate somebody. People in this world like power, because power is the ultimate intoxicant. And they try to get it through the medium of politics or whatever other way, and so that they can control people and have influence over people. One devotee was mentioning, I heard a class, he made a mention of the wife of Mao Zedong. You know, in those days, when the heady days when they were completely in control. And she had this famous quote. And she said, people are mad after sex because they don't know what power is. Meaning thereby that if they had power, then they'd forget all these lower things. that sex would just become something so ordinary and something you don't need to bother about. Because now you have the ultimate thing, you have power. And through these siddhis, you can actually get power. Actually, I don't remember if I mentioned it here in the manor, but there was one, because I'm saying it because it relates to your Margaret Thatcher. Now that she's no more, we can safely say these things. So there was this one, there was this one mystic yogi who became very popular with the political class in India. And he had all these powers that just bewildered everybody. So then, because of some political recommendation, he was recommended to the Indian embassy here in London. This man wanted to meet all the political bigwigs in UK at that time. This was before Margaret Thatcher became the Prime Minister. And so among other leaders, he also told the embassy staff that he wanted to meet Margaret Thatcher because she was the upcoming leader at that time. And this was a book written by the embassy, the ambassador who was here at that time. So he wrote a book and he mentioned all these incidents in that book. So it's become quite a rage in India about a year or two ago. So the ambassador was not at all inclined to entertain this yogi. And when the yogi wanted to meet Margaret Thatcher and everything, he was saying, what for, you know, but what to do? There was instructions from Delhi, so he had to follow. So somehow even Margaret Thatcher was, you know, wondering, what's this all about? And somehow because, you know, she was trying to rise up the ladder, she had to have her connections. And so she said, all right, we'll meet him. So then they met. And she came straight to the point because she was known as a no-nonsense lady. So she didn't beat around the bush and no pleasantries and courtesies. And they met, and so the first thing she asked him, so what do you want? So he was very calm. He said, please take a piece of paper. She was getting irritated. What is this man saying? And a pen. And please write down some word there. And you remain where you are. So he was at quite a distance, like, you know, like maybe where the wall is and where I am. Anyway, so she wrote it down. Obviously he couldn't see it. And he told her what the word was. Her jaws fell open. Now she was beginning to listen. He said, we'll do it again. And he gave her a few tests like this. And she did it, and he was spot on every time. Now she became really interested. And then he was turning up the heat. And he said, okay, now I'll tell you, you want to know when you'll become Prime Minister? Then he had her eating out of his hand. And he said, you will become the Prime Minister in such and such time, and you will remain the Prime Minister for such and such period. And the ambassador says, now after all these years, he's writing his memoirs. So he said he was actually right. He made those predictions correctly, and Margaret Thatcher, what happened is that this ambassador, he met Margaret Thatcher many years later somewhere in Zambia, Zimbabwe, somewhere at some Commonwealth conference. And he happened to pass her by in the conference hall. He said, Your Excellency, do you remember this one yogi we brought to see you? I won't mention his name. And, you know, he had predicted, but as he went on, she looked around and said, hush, hush, you don't talk about these things. So that's the inside story that you might not have heard before. So these yogis are for real. They're there. So this man was an ordinary man. He was not even literate, I think, properly. You know, just barely literate, perhaps. And just see the kind of power he had. That's why these yogis, they get distracted because they get such power. They can control even prime ministers. They can have prime ministers eating out of their hands. He had that in the situation in India too. All the political class, regardless of which party they were affiliated to, were basically running after him because he had these amazing powers. So although it's just material, mind you, it's not spiritual. It has nothing to do with spirituality. It's an incidental byproduct of performing Ashtanga Yoga. However, because of this mix-up, people confuse this to be spirituality, that he's a very spiritual person. But actually, this man was anything but spiritual. He was completely materialistic. But somehow or other, maybe because of some previous life, you know, sadhana or something, you know, he had this power. So the things that were achieved by the yogic process in the previous ages, and to some degree even now, are achieved to some degree by the modern scientific method. Prabhupada made these points. He said, look, people could fly earlier by yogic power. They could levitate and they could move from one place to another. In fact, Srila Prabhupada mentions there are planets. In the higher planets, this is very common. The residents of the higher planets, they can do that. There is a planet called Siddhaloka, where people are born with mystic powers. All these mystic powers they have naturally by birth. They don't have to perform any austerities or yogic practices to acquire these powers. Similarly, the Gandharva Loka, people are born with such exceptional singing abilities. It's every one of them from birth, they're beautiful singers. Now, these siddhis and so on that were obtained, you know, flying in the sky, walking on the water, people can now achieve by science. The Prabhupada used to say now, you know, people are very proud of their aeroplanes. But yogis in the early days could do that just by mystic power. But now everything has become gross, so you need an airplane that may crash or may sometimes disappear and not be found months on end, unfortunately. Or to walk on water, then you have to have a boat. You have to have a physical thing that may sometimes capsize on striking an iceberg. People earlier used to be able to talk or communicate hundreds of miles away telepathically. Now you have the telephone, you have email, you have... In other words, the point I'm trying to make is that the subtle science, what could be achieved by subtle sciences, material sciences in the olden days, can now be partially achieved by the gross sciences. So we see how everything is becoming so gross nowadays. Similarly, what could be achieved in the earlier times by just some mystic power or subtle sciences like changing the gender of somebody, now can be achieved in a very gross way by surgical procedures. So we see that this was happening every month. Lord Shiva said he granted the benediction upon Vasishtha Muni's request that at least Sudyumna should be a male because he has to rule the kingdom. And then Lord Shiva said, all right, 1 month a male, the next month female, and then again a male. So how did that happen? If it were today, that means it would be a surgery every month. At the end of every month, you would have to go under the knife. But by Lord Shiva's power, this was happening obviously, you know, very easily. So Lord Shiva is also a great mystic yogi. He has tremendous mystic ability. Next to Krishna, he is probably the most powerful yogi in the universe. So he could accomplish this very easily. And here it's stated in the purport that the citizens were not very satisfied because 1 month the king was a male, the other month he was a female. So there's so many unusual things that are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, nowadays people accept a queen. And they may also accept a king, but to accept the king who becomes a queen every alternate month, that's not something you really, is not something very common. So one can sympathize with the subjects at that time. So in any case, what is said here also is being favored by the spiritual master and according to the words of Lord Shiva. So you had Vasishtha Muni, who was a spiritual master of of Sudyumna. And you also had Lord Shiva, who is the spiritual master of the whole world. So by the grace of the spiritual master, by spiritual blessings, or the blessings of spiritually evolved personalities, many things can happen even on the material platform. Many wonderful things can happen. Because ultimately the material can be subsumed within the spiritual. So we have a description of many, many such amazing phenomena here. Even the process of creation, for example, if this seems unusual, then we have to study what's there in the other portions of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where you have, in the process of creation, many species emanating from one particular species. You know, Shukadeva Goswami describes that there are 10 types of creation that happen. The first 6 are the primary creations that have to do with Mahavishnu, and then the creation of the elements and time and so on and so forth. And then you have the next 4 that have to do with the secondary creations done by Brahma, who is the secondary creator. And number 1, they deal with plants. That's the 7th creation. The 8th creation is the creation of the 28 types of animals. The 9th creation is the creation of human beings, of whom there are many, many types. And the 10th creation is creation of demigods. That's an extra creation. There are 8 types in this category too. And the demigods are in a sense like human beings, but they're extraordinary human beings. So from these higher categories of living beings in the universe, the lower categories originated. So from Brahma, Brahma had his sons, then there was progeny, and then there was further progeny, and then, for example, from Brahma came Marichi, from Marichi came Kashyapa, from Kashyapa he married Aditi, he married Diti, and then from Diti also there were many others, like the snakes, the scorpions, they all came from the birds. Now it's something that we can't reconcile. Even modern day science will not be able to understand this. What kind of DNA, you know, those higher species would have had, that they could generate other species from their bodies. We don't find that happening. You know, when two male and female of a particular species come together, then they can only generate their own species. They can't generate another species. But we see that in the process of creation, this actually happened. They not only generated another species, but a variety of other species. So all these amazing things come, which means that actually we can never understand what this world is all about. I mean, we understand the essence, there is a place to not live in and leave and go back to the spiritual world. But the way this world is constructed, how creation took place, how it evolved, how the different elements moved on from one to the other, how the different species of life evolved, and how this evolution is quite different from Darwinian evolution. See, these are amazing things for even scientists to want to study, because there's many, many subtle things here. And this process of how somebody can become male and a female every alternate month is not fairy tale, it's not mythology. It's happening because of these super mystic powers that personalities like Lord Shiva had. But in any case, ultimately, we are not concerned with these things. We are ultimately concerned with becoming pure devotees and going beyond even all these amazing phenomena of the material world. Because the spiritual world is unlimitedly more amazing than the material world. So we have actually nothing to do with all these other subtle and mystic and amazing changes here. The most amazing thing, or the most amazing personality in the world, Krishna, is the one who we need to surrender to and become his pure devotee. And that is the ultimate success of our life. The Bhagavad Gita describes even the soul as being amazing. He's seen to be amazing, described to be amazing, heard of as amazing, Ascharyavat Pashyati, you know that sloka. So the most amazing thing, of course, is Krishna consciousness. However, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is again another amazing scripture, gives us a complete description of the material world as well as the spiritual world, and urges us to move from the material to the spiritual by the process of Krishna consciousness. So we'll stop here. Are there any comments or questions?